WMFO Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Pre-recorded.
Thank you, Digital Henry. Good morning. It's the 24th of March, 2021. I'm going to continue with Women's Month with some private eyelashes. I uncovered this one called Anne of the Airlanes. I guess she's an air hostess. I have no known episode, title, or an original air date. I got this from Old Time Radio Catalog, and they couldn't elaborate, neither can the Encyclopedia of Old Time Radio. So I'll see how it goes. It appears to be a serial, so I'm going to bookend today's show with Anne of the Airlanes. Thanks for listening.
Over valley and mountain, river and plain, through wind and storm, rides Anne of the Airlanes.
Seek hiding in the baggage compartment of the huge experimental transport plane being used by a band of smugglers, Anne Burton finds herself an unwilling stowaway on a transatlantic hop to Cape Town, South Africa. The pilot, Jack Baker of Interstate Airlines, has agreed to assist the United States Secret Service in their efforts to track down the band of diamond runners, and to do this has apparently joined the ranks of the smugglers. Meanwhile, things are happening back in Anne's hometown, Springfield, where co-pilot Pete Peterson, hostess Kay Thompson, and Jack's brother Bobby are watching out for any messages from Jack, as well as trying to fathom the identity of the mysterious Doc, who is known to head the smuggling ring and who is known to have a private radio station hidden somewhere in Springfield. Let's see how much they have found out.
Well, I have to hand it to you, Bobby. You certainly have done a nice job with that receiver there.
Thanks, Pete. It was quite a job to rewind that coil so I could pick up that high frequency that Mr. Morrison gave me.
Cuts right through the old ether, though. Just like a factory-built job.
Yeah. But I haven't heard Jack on it yet. You don't suppose maybe those gangsters have done something with him, do you, Pete?
Nah, they need him to pilot that ship too badly. And besides that, Jack's too smart to let them get an idea that he wasn't playing right into their hands.
But you'd think he'd have found a chance to send some kind of a message. Just a word, maybe.
Probably is having his hands full herding that transport along.
Well, do you suppose the fellows at headquarters got their messages through to him? I mean, the ones they sent about Miss Burton being hidden on the ship with him?
I doubt it, Bobby. You see, there are two of those fellows, and they can take turns watching Jack. And you just bet that they see that he doesn't fool with that radio. It's too easy to give away a position that way.
I guess that's the reason their station here in Springfield hasn't sent out any messages either. They must know the government's watching for them and that they'll get the location by cross-checking.
That just reminds me. I still wonder about that radio room in the Tyler Sanitarium. You're sure that we saw it, Bobby?
Oh, of course I am, Pete. Oh, gee, there it was, just as plain as day. And then when we go down the same steps and go through the same door, just a little later, there's not a thing there but just a hospital laundry. Kind of gives you the creeps like it does in a show when you see a magician make a lion in a cage disappear. Yeah, only there's a trick to that.
Pretty much of a trick to make a radio station disappear, too. But I think this Doc is a bit of a magician himself, the way he fixes up these coral islands with power plants, has radio beams for his own ships, airports in the middle of swamps that even pilots flying over can't find.
I don't know, Pete. I feel kind of like Kay. A fellow that owns a hospital wouldn't have to be a crook when he's got a swell reputation like Doc Tyler has.
No? Well, don't let those reputations fool you, Bobby. We know that radio room was in the hospital. We saw it. Maybe when Morrison gets back here, we'll have another look around that place.
Say, they ought to be here pretty soon, too, Pete. Aunt Hattie's going to stay over at Kay's, I guess. But I wonder who this Zeb is that Mr. Morrison radioed about.
You got me there, Bobby. All I can get is that he's some native down there that they picked up because he seems to have an interest in this thing. We'll know all about it just as soon as they get in, which won't be very long now, so I...
D-12 calling Baker. D-12 calling Baker.
Hey, there. They're calling for Jack again. Maybe he'll answer this time.
D-12 calling Baker. If you hear this, Baker, just say 12 on special frequency. If you hear this, Baker, just say 12 on special frequency.
You got that receiver on that frequency, Bobby?
Yeah.
D-12 calling Baker. If you hear this, Baker, say 12 on special frequency. We'll be listening and call again in 1 hour.
Oh, gee. I thought maybe Jack would answer that call. I'm getting sort of worried about him, Pete. Say, just where is that Cape St. Roque anyway, do you know?
Well, as near as I figure it, Bobby, Cape St. Roque, where Jack is heading, is that big cape that juts out of South America. It's the land that's furthest east and naturally the nearest to Africa.
I guess I'm just going to have to get a couple of maps and put them up here if Jack's going to work with the Secret Service so I'll know where he is. But maybe you'll let me go with him.
Calling BM. T.S. calling BM. T.S. calling BM.
That's the station here calling the transport on their own wavelength.
Yeah, and maybe they'll answer on that one.
BM.
At least, maybe that Vic will say something
BM.
And we'll know that they're still alive.
T.S. calling BM. T.S. calling BM.
But with that frequency, they couldn't come in here, could they, Bobby? I mean, you wouldn't be able to pick them up.
Oh, yeah, I think so, Pete. Because what I think they do is to relay the call through the station they use to a radio beam down there in Florida. And we can get that easy and... Oh, listen.
VM answering TS. What do you want, TS?
Where are you, VM?
Where are we, Baker? Huh? Okay. I've just passed O'Rion of Jamaica.
Everything all right?
Everything all right so far. Motors, gas, oil, all okay.
Have to leave air now. We'll call you later on frequency number 4.
Okay, TS. Turn it off, Baker. I'll tell you where to pick him up next time.
Pete, he's all right. Oh, but Jamaica. Gosh, I didn't think they'd see any land at all after they left Florida.
From the way they must be flying, Bobby, they'll hardly be out of sight of land all the way down to the Cape. You see, there are islands clear across the Caribbean Sea. It makes a kind of a chain known as the Greater Antilles and the Lesser Antilles. But they're hardly the place you'd pick for a good landing.
Oh, but they won't have to land, I hope. Oh, anyhow, Vic said everything was going all right.
I think I'm beginning to see how they've been keeping the government from checking on them, too.
Say, I got that, too, Pete. What was that frequency number? 4, wasn't it?
Sure. They just make out a list of the different frequencies that they're going to use and then keep switching according to the list. And we can only pick them up if we're lucky, like we were this time.
Well, there must be Kay coming in. Hi, Kay.
Oh, hello, Bobby. Know anything new, Pete?
Nope, Kay. We've just been fishing around trying to see if Jack is going to get a chance to use that transmitter on the government frequency. Guess he hasn't a chance.
You mean you haven't heard a thing since they left Florida?
Oh, no, Kay. We mean from Jack himself.
Oh.
But just a few minutes ago, we heard the station here, that T.S. they call themselves, get in touch with Vic on the transport, and they asked his position.
Hmm.
Vic had asked Jack, and we didn't hear Jack himself, but they were over the island of Jamaica. Boy, they must be really traveling.
Of course they are. Once they get up into that substratosphere, there's nothing on wings that'll catch them or even keep close.
You've been down to the airport, Kay?
Sure, and that's what I came to tell you about, Pete. Mr. Morrison has radioed, and Interstate has granted us a leave of absence for a month.
Us?
Uh-huh.
What do you mean, us? I thought maybe that Art would see that I'd get a chance to get into this thing with Jack, but...
But you just can't figure an air hostess in the business of running down smugglers, is that it?
Well, no. If that is,
Anyhow, the government evidently thinks that maybe... after hearing how Anne bailed out to take that message to Jack, well, maybe these nurses are pretty necessary after all. Especially when people take off for Africa.
Africa? You mean that... Oh, I see. You mean you're going by boat, huh?
I mean that we're flying. And, Pete, I think you're to do the honors at the controls just as soon as the okay comes through from Washington.
Swell, Kay. All except for one thing. Just a little matter, of course, but maybe something Morrison hadn't thought of because he's been too busy trying to get back here. But just what are we going to use in place of a plane that'll fly the Atlantic?
That just shows that you don't keep up with the trend of the times, Mr. Peterson. Mr. Boyle of Interstate told me not over 20 minutes ago that he was making arrangements with the government to fit out Doug's Aircat with gas tanks and having it ready in a couple of days.
Doug's Aircat?
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Say, I wonder if they've gone over that ship completely since we landed. We gave it a pretty hard roughing in that hurricane.
Boy, I'll say we did. I'll never forget that. You know, the way we had to land there, that emergency field.
Oh, that's one of the reasons the government chose the Aircat. It didn't show a sign of a strain anywhere, and the motor's like new.
I'll bet that Tony Johnson is pacing up and down the tarmac, watching for Art to show up in that Aircat of his.
I'll say he is. They ought to be landing pretty shortly now. We've had several radio calls from them down at the airport. Say, that reminds me. The station we thought was in the Tyler Sanitarium.
Oh, it was in the Tyler Sanitarium. I saw it.
I mean, that was in the Tyler Sanitarium. I wonder if the boys managed to get a check on the location when they called.
Oh, gee whiz, I never thought to tune into here. Oh, but if they did, it was an accident, the way they've been switching around.
Well, I'm afraid I've missed something, Bobby. What's all this about?
Oh, well, you see, Kay, the way they've been doing, they give Vic, or maybe it was Joe, a list of the different wavelengths they were going to use, with numbers the way they were going to use them. And then they just send one on one frequency and the next message on the next wave on the list, and like that on down the line. That way, if anybody's trying to cross-check them, well, it'll just be luck, that's all.
Pete, I don't care what you think. There's someone with the most cunning brain I've ever heard of behind this thing, and it's not Doc Tyler. At least, I don't think he's smart in that way.
Have it your own way, Kay. But you have to admit he was very much put out when he almost forced him to show us down to that sub-basement. He was relieved when all of us found out that it was just a hospital laundry room. And you know yourself the way he politely but very firmly ordered us, and Morrison representing the government, too, out of that hospital. Well, if Tyler isn't the doc that's heading this diamond smuggling ring, then he'll do for the purpose until we pin the real one down.
I kind of believe like Kay does, though. Dr. Tyler's... Well, I just can't believe it's him.
Now, look. You can't tell me that Doc Tyler is just plain dumb. And a fellow would have to be dumb to have a radio station and nobody else knows what else, right? And they're in the same building with him all the time and him never know anything about it.
Oh, I remember the time they caught the counterfeiters in the boarding house where you were staying, Pete. Now, do you mean to tell me that you knew about that all the time?
Ah, no, Kay. That's different. How could I know anything about that? They kept their stuff out of sight when they weren't using it.
Well, that's just what I'm getting at. Whoever's using the hospital for a base of operations for this gang is keeping the whole thing out of sight of the owner, Doc Tyler. And the fact that the leader of the gang is known as Doc, well, that's just a coincidence, that's all.
Coincidence, huh? And I suppose that radio room disappearing was a trick by a magician, like Bobby spoke of a while ago, you know, making a lion in his cage disappear on the stage. I'm sorry,
Kay. Gee, gosh, Pete, a magician. I wonder why I didn't think of that before. Maybe I got it.
Oh, you mean, Bobby, that maybe this doc is a magician?
No, but look, wait a minute. I got a book in Jack's bookcase. I'm going to get it.
I wonder what he had on his mind, bringing magicians into this thing.
Well, Bobby's a pretty bright lad, Pete. Let's see. Hmm? Oh, well, did you find it, Bobby?
Yeah, wait a minute. It's in the book here.
Famous illusions created by Thurston, Houdini, Alexander, and other famous magicians. I still don't see what this has to do with radio stations, Bobby.
You'll see in just a minute. Let's see, it's on page. Oh, there it is. Right there. You see?
Pete, that's it. There's the answer to that disappearing radio room right there.
I'm getting it. Say, I think we're going to run across something tonight. Let's close up this place and get out to the airport and pick up Morrison. We'll pay Doc Tyler another visit, and this time, I bet we don't find a washing machine.
Once again, Bobby, Pete, and Kay endeavor to unravel the secret of the illicit radio station that is the nucleus of the diamond smuggling ring. But just what has that book on magic to do with the secret of the Tyler Sanitarium? Each day's thrills make it imperative that you hear every one of the exciting chapters in the adventures of Anne of the Airlines.
Thank you, lads, for that drop-in. In the first quarter of the show, we heard Anne of the Airlanes. Again, I have no information on the title, the original air date, or the episode number, but I'm going to continue on here. Last week I played a Candy Matson, which I enjoyed, so I'm going to go ahead and continue with another Candy Matson for Women's Month. I'm not certain about this episode number either, because some of this stuff gets a little obscure. But this one's titled The Movie Company, with an original air date of the 29th of August, 1950. Thanks for listening.
Hello, Yukon 28209. Yes, this is Candy Matson.
Heat that baby on the tree.
Fix those dolly tracks.
And look out for that cable, it's hot.
Mallard, what in the name of the San Francisco Police Department are you doing up here on Telegraph Hill?
Working, Candy, in the name of the San Francisco Police Department.
Here, with these people who are making the movie?
Yeah, how about that? Me, a lieutenant in homicide, and I'm assigned to riding herd on these Hollywood characters.
Oh, it's better than murder.
I'll take murder any day. What are you doing around here?
I did some shopping at Speedy's this morning while I was pinching the avocados. They told me that there was a Hollywood gang over by Coit Tower shooting some scenes for a movie with a San Francisco background.
They might just as well have stayed in the studio. They brought their own lawns, prop trees, fake bushes, the works. If it ever snowed up here on Telegraph Hill, they'd have brought some of that along, too.
You've never worked in Hollywood, Mallard. Only God can make a tree, but Hollywood presumes to improve on them. What are they doing now?
Just getting ready to shoot a scene, I think.
Oh.
They've been rehearsing it all morning.
Mm-hmm. What's it all about, do you know?
As far as I can figure, it's a story about San Francisco right after the gold rush. Look at all the costumes.
Very authentic. Looks like they'd been shipped around the horn. By the way, Mallard, do you know who's in the picture?
Some lush tomato named Cherry Dana and a Colorado boy, Buff Arnold.
Arnold? Did you say Buff Arnold?
That's right. Why?
Oh, forgive me, Mallard, dear. I knew Buff Arnold when he didn't have a place to house in. He professed to carry a very warm torch for me.
Uh-huh. So that's why you so casually dropped by.
Oh.
An old flame, huh?
Don't be ridiculous. I didn't even know the guy was here, let alone stealing pictures.
A likely story.
All right, quiet, please. Let's have quiet.
Quiet. This is a take.
All set, Mr. Dix. We're ready.
Good. Okay, Cherry, we'll roll this one, take a chance on it. Just remember to keep up against those trees. We don't want any shots of those modern buildings below the hill.
Oh, remember, Red.
Where is my old pal, Buff Arnold, Mallard, dear?
By me. Judging by what's been going on, he's not in this particular scene. Mm-hmm.
All right, stand by. Roll him.
Scene 47, take 10.
Wait a minute. Cut. Oh, where's that coming from?
Out on the bay, Mr. Dix.
Fine thing, a present-day steamer whistle and an 1850 picture. Hold it. Ames.
Yes?
Let me know when the fool ship is tied up. We won't shoot the scene until it's docked.
Yes, sir. Oh,
darn it, I was hoping I'd see some action.
Well, I'll give you some action. Come on, walk around with me, Candy. I'll show you all the sights.
Sights like what, for instance, Mallard?
Oh, all the lights they brought up here. They must have 1,000 of them.
Undoubtedly to wash out the wrinkles on the leading lady's face.
And talk about props. It must have taken a whole freight train to get them up here.
Well, I have to have them.
For instance, look, right up there.
Hmm? Where, Mallard?
Up there, above. In that tree, hanging by their necks.
Oh, Mallard!
Don't jump like that, Cupcake. Oh. They're only dummies hanging from those ropes.
Three of them. They look so realistic.
I must admit, they really do. I understand they use them in a scene where they recreate a lynching in Portsmouth Square.
Recreate, did you say?
Yeah.
Maybe you're right. Take another look, honey bun. A good look at the one in the middle.
What are you trying to... Fry me for lard. That one in the middle is no dummy.
You're no dummy either, boy of mine. How many times have you looked up there?
Well, just a couple of times, but the last time I looked, the one in the middle wasn't an ex-human being.
With that, I toss the whole thing in your lap, Mallard. I promote you back to homicide.
Oh, why didn't these characters stay in Hollywood?
It is a bit of a shame, isn't it? Cluttering up our lovely Telegraph Hill trees with gently swaying corpses. Come on, Mallard. Let's give the director a slight touch of apoplexy.
The National Broadcasting Company presents Candy Matson, Yukon 28209.
It's funny how sometimes when you're lazy and want to do nothing except live the good, pure life, trouble comes up and belts you over the head with a vengeance. Well, that's the way it happened to me. I'd just finished a deal that took me 3 weeks to crack. I made some good money out of it, banked it, and sat back to relax. When I heard about the movie company on location on the other side of the hill, my curiosity got the better of me. As of that moment, my contemplated relaxation was at an end. Period. Paragraph. I literally walked right into trouble because there was Mallard and cut down.
Okay, Mr. Dix. Take a good look at him. You recognize the Jack?
I recognize him, yes, but I don't know him. He was one of the extras we used in a scene yesterday.
Did he come up from Hollywood with you?
I'm pretty sure he didn't. I think he was hired here locally. Wait a minute. Who's this young lady? I don't want any outsiders in on this.
Don't fret your little head, Mr. Dix. Aside from being a material witness, she's a well-known private investigator.
Oh, excuse me. I didn't know.
That's all right. No need to apologize. Some of my best friends are movie directors.
Who would keep the roster on your personnel?
My assistant, Bill Ames.
Is he around?
Well, I'm right here, Lieutenant.
Oh, good. Can you give us any dope on this fellow?
Oh, golly, I'm afraid not. I've seen him, but I wouldn't know his name from Adam.
How about the payroll? When do you pay off the extras?
Yeah, that's a thought.
We pay off at 5 o'clock tonight.
Why don't we come back then, Mallard? We can check off the names against the pay vouchers. There's one thing extras like to do, and that's get paid. The name that doesn't show up is our friend the corpse.
Okay, we'll let it go like that. What do you pay off?
Room 873, Montfair Hotel.
Make sure everybody's there, unless they want a little trouble thrown at them. I'm sorry, Mr. Dix. You can go on with your shooting now.
No more today. It's too unnerving. Ames, knock it off. Call will be for 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, sharp.
Right, Chief.
Break it up, everybody. 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, in costumes. And that means 8 o'clock, understand? Not morning.
You mind waiting here for a moment, Candy? I want to put in a call to the coroner's office for a wagon.
Sure, that's all right. Go ahead.
Good. It'll only be a few minutes.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Dix, pardon me.
Yes?
Can you tell me where Buff Arnold is staying?
What do you want with Buff Arnold, young lady?
I used to know him when he was playing bit parts in Hollywood.
Oh. Did you work in Hollywood?
I did a little time down there, sitting around in agents' offices.
You know, you're a sharp little cookie. Say, all of a sudden I've got an idea.
I'll bet.
No. On the level, believe me. I have a small part coming up that'd fit you to a T. Good-looking gal, wise, supposed to work in her father's store selling supplies to the miners. Can you act at all?
I used to shoot a fairly sharp mess of dialogue.
Do you live close by?
Right over there, one block. Penthouse on the top.
All the better. As soon as your policeman friend removes the deceased there, why don't we go over to your place and look at the script?
You know something? I've got an idea. That's the idea you had the idea about. Okay, I'll look at the script. But for your information, Mr. Dix, I'm interested only in playing a part in your picture. Mallard came back, and I told him what had developed with Dix. He shot me a look that had more question marks in it than a government income tax form. I assured him I could handle the situation, and he left with the body, still clad in its 49er prospector's outfit. Dix issued some final orders, took me by the arm, and we strolled over to my place.
Charming, but positively charming.
Thank you.
What a gorgeous view. How long have you lived here, Miss... Now, isn't that silly? I don't even know your name.
Matson. Candy Matson.
Candy Matson. Never have I heard a name match a personality so completely. I'm Reginald Dix. Just call me Reg.
As you say, Reg. Would you like a drink?
Oh, splendid. Soda highball?
I think I can scrape one together.
This is absolutely enchanting. I'm going to ask to make all my pictures in San Francisco from now on.
I don't think you'd go wrong. Of course, it'd be a little rough if you were making a picture with an Indian background and needed shots of the Taj Mahal and the Himalayas.
Oh, simple. I'd change it to the Ferry Building and Twin Peaks.
Very good. Here you are, Reg.
Thank you. I can use this after that messy discovery up there on that tree. Well, here's to crime.
That's a charming toast. Now then, about this part you were speaking of, I don't even belong to the Screen Actors Guild anymore.
Oh, mere detail. I'll call the studio tonight and have them arrange your membership.
As simple as that. You know, I think if some of your bright boys got together, you could win the war in Korea without half trying.
Oh, let's not be snide, my dear.
Oh, excuse me a moment. Someone at the door.
Certainly. Whoever it is, though, send them away.
Yes, Master.
Hi.
Hi. But now that we've established our highs, is there something I can do for you?
I'm Cherry Dana. Is Mr. Dix here?
Oh, why, yes. Would you wait here, please?
I will not wait here. I want in.
Now, just a minute.
There you are, Ed. You have a short memory, haven't you?
Cherry, what are you doing here? I'm having a conference.
So I see.
I hate to mention it, but this happens to be a private home, Miss Dana. I'll have to ask you to leave.
Don't be boring. You lured my director up here, and I'm going to see that some little local wench doesn't put the squeeze play on him.
Why, you pampered brat, get out of here right now, or I'll show you how a local wench can back up words with action.
Oh, now hold on here, both of you. Cherry, I resent this intrusion just as much as Miss Madsen does, I'm sure.
I'll bet. What about me? You said you were going to drive me back to the hotel.
Very well, it slipped my mind. I'm sorry, Candy. I dislike scenes of this sort. We'll discuss our business later.
Good. I find now that I'm extremely interested. Good afternoon, Miss Dana. I'll see you later. I was so mad I was boiling. If I'd been a thermometer, quicksilver would have been streaming out of my ears. I did the most natural thing, took a shower, and little by little I simmered down. Actors and actresses are like anybody else. Most of them are darn nice people just trying to make a living, but one ham like Cherry Dana can ruin the picture. Just as I was getting dressed, the Ferry Building siren blew its top, indicating 4:30. I had to step on it if I was going to be at the Mont Fair at 5 in time for the payroll sequence with the extras. So I stepped on it and found myself in a minor mob scene outside room 873 at the Mont Fair Hotel. Mallard spotted me, grabbed me by the arm, and took me inside the room.
I really didn't expect to see you, Candy.
Why not?
I thought perhaps you were discussing contract terms with Dix by now. Big Hollywood star and all that.
Oh, Mallard, cut it out.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. As I call out your names, step up fast and sign the voucher. Anderson, Robert, Apperson, Lou,
yeah.
Bennett, Bert, Beverly.
I studied the faces as they stepped by the cashier's table set up in the room. They were all types. Anyone could have been a villain, a dance hall girl, a hero, an ingenue, or just plain extra. The roll call droned on in the background. The whole thing took about 10 minutes. And suddenly, we were alone. Ames, the assistant director, the girl who had done the actual paying, Mallard, and myself.
Well, that's it.
Who's missing, Ames?
You're in for a bit of a shock.
How do you mean?
Nobody's missing. Everybody listed on our payroll, checked in, and was paid off.
What?
That's right.
Did you recognize every person who had been paid off?
I'm pretty sure I did.
Well, this is a fine kettle of nothing. We have an extra who's working in the picture, and yet he isn't. So he ends up hanging by his neck from a tree on Telegraph Hill. Who was the Joker?
The Joker, the one you can play wild. Are you sure they're all paid?
Well, positive. Double-checked with their guild cards and signatures.
Well, isn't this cute?
Oh, excuse me, please. Hello? Yes, this is Ames. Oh, yes, Cherry. What? He's what? Great Scott.
What's the matter, Ames? What is it? You're white as a sheet.
Dix. He's just been found shot to death in his room.
From
From San Francisco, the National Broadcasting Company is presenting Candy Matson, Yukon 28209.
Reginald Dix, well-known Hollywood director, shot dead in his hotel room. We were looking for developments. We got them, but not the kind we expected. Mallard led the way up to the suite that Dix had been occupying on the top floor. There was a mob around the door, and my boy Mallard soon dispersed them and instituted some semblance of order. Dix was sprawled out on the balcony overlooking the bay, and an ever-widening pool of blood showed that he'd been hit in the chest. Cherry Dana was pacing the room, smoking a cigarette. Ames stood in the middle with his jaw flapping. And who should be in the room, too, but my old pal from my days in Hollywood, Buff Arnold.
Candy. Candy Matson. What a place for a reunion.
Yes, isn't it? How are you, Buff?
Ill. Terribly ill. If I have to step into the other room, I hope you'll understand. Reg was a great friend of mine.
Sure. Sure, let's go in the bedroom. You look sort of green. Besides, I have a few questions I'd like to ask you, Buff.
It's a deal. Anything to get out of here, let's go.
Wait a minute, Candy. Who is this guy?
Buff Arnold, Mallard, the fellow I was speaking about.
Where were you going?
In there. He doesn't feel too good. The closest he's ever been to blood is a bottle of ketchup in color.
Okay. Don't let him out of your sight. I have a flock of questions and need a flock of answers.
As you say, Mallard, dear.
And don't get carried away yourself.
This the bedroom?
Yeah.
Well, Buff, you seem to be doing all right.
A lot different than when I knew you in Hollywood, Candy.
You look swell, Buff. Too darn swell.
What do you mean?
You bring back too many memories.
You look mighty good yourself, Candy. You're no longer a plump little kid just out of high school. You're downright pretty, gal.
In the good old days, I'd have jumped through hoops to hear you say that.
Got any hoops handy? I'll say it again.
No soap.
Maybe we could revive some of those memories, Candy.
Not a chance, Buff Boy. Things have changed. Hollywood and everyone in it, including you, were a part of a dim, sad past. And instead of just plain Buff, that's a rebuff.
Very cute. I haven't heard the gag pulled since yesterday.
Tell me, did you hear about the body that was found on Telegraph Hill this morning?
I sure did. Now, poor Reg. I told him this picture had a jinx on it before we left the studio. Little things have happened right from the start.
Like what?
Well, in the first place, I wasn't even supposed to be in the picture. They were going to give it to some new kid as a build-up. A week before the first day of shooting, he up and disappeared. He hasn't been heard from since. When they shoved me into the breach. Then the assistant director tripped and fell off a catwalk, broke both legs. He had to be replaced.
Anything else, Buff?
Yeah. About that time, Cherry Dana whipped herself into a batch of temperament and walked off the lot. Held up production a week. Then the luggage for San Francisco was rerouted somewhere else. Never has caught up with us. Now the body this morning and Dix just now.
Certainly sounds like a jinx. By the way, how do you and the great Cherry get along, Buff?
Fine. I try not to see her except on the set. Come here, Ken. Let me hold you in my arms once, just once. I want the feel of someone who's truly genuine.
You're still just a little boy, aren't you, Buff?
Okay, Arnold, I'd like to, Well, pardon me. I hate to break this up, but I want to talk to you, Mr. Arnold.
That was a fine time Mallard picked to walk in. And then I got to thinking, maybe it was a fine time. He was due to have a little fire set under him. As I walked out into the other room, the boys in blue had arrived, and they were swarming all over the place. Ames was no longer present, neither was Cherry Dana. I wasn't going to give Mallard the satisfaction of an explanation, so I eased out the door and went down to the lobby. I asked where Ames was staying and went back up to his room, 672. A knock on the door produced results.
Just a moment.
Oh, Miss Matson. Something you wanted?
Yes, may I come in?
Why, yes. I was just lying down. This thing about Reg has knocked me for a complete loop.
It seems to be quite a shock to everybody. You've been with Reginald Dix for a long time, haven't you, Ames?
Well, off and on, yes. A good number of years.
How about La Dana?
Cherry? Well, I've known her extremely well, even before she became a top-flight star.
Can you give me any idea who might have had it in for Dix? If you can, you better spill. The truth will come out sooner or later, Ames. It always does in things of this sort.
I've only one little thing I can tell. I've already told it to your lieutenant friend.
Oh? And what's that?
As I got back from Telegraph Hill, I dropped by Reg's suite. Wanted to talk about tomorrow's shooting. As I drew near his door, I heard loud arguing.
Arguing? Who were the opponents?
Reg and Cherry Dana.
Mm-hmm. And what were they arguing about, Ames?
You.
So that's it. Tell me, is Cherry the kind of woman who would turn killer on an impulse?
It's hard to say. She has a terrible temper.
Mm-hmm. Does Buff Arnold fit into the picture in any way?
I don't know. He's a sly one, that Arnold. He plays his cards in strictly a commercial manner. May fit into the picture. He and Reg were never too friendly.
I see. Well, thanks, Amesy. I'll leave now. And you'd better lock your door. The way things are going, you might wake up to find yourself dead. I went up to Cherry Dana's suite, but I drew a blank there, no answer. So I went back to the scene of the murder, Dix's rooms on the top floor. Mallard was just leaving. He shot me a look that would have knocked out a North Korean tank at 1,000 yards and started to brush on by me, but I would have none of it. Now, just a moment, Boy Blue. Come on back to that over 21 level. Just because Buff had his arms around me is no sign we were playing a scene from Romeo and Juliet.
I don't think I've seen that close a grip even in professional wrestling.
Oh, cut it out. What'd you turn up in there? Anything at all?
No, not a thing. Can't even find the murder weapon.
Got any ideas?
Lots of them. We've already taken Miss Dana into custody.
I had a hunch it was leading in that direction.
Incidentally, did you ever hear of a Christopher Seema? He's been a bookie around town here for several years.
Christopher Seema? No, can't say I have. Why?
Well, he was the boy who was hanging from the tree. Oh. According to our files, he dabbled in everything from gambling to blackmail.
Seema. Seema, that name rings bells somehow, Mallard.
One other thing. This isn't personal, you understand.
Yeah.
But stay away from Buff Arnold. We've got our eye on him, too.
Little things were suddenly clicking way back in my mind, awfully vague, but the old processes from years before were coming to life ever so slowly. Mallard had work to do, plenty of it, down at the Hall of Justice, work in which I was included out. I went outside on California Street, watched him get into a squad car with two of his men, and I waved him a goodbye. That was when I had another idea. Dix's suite. Cops were through with it. The body'd been removed. But I had a hunch that was the key to the situation. Knowing the manager of the Montfair, it was no trouble at all to get a key to Reg's suite, and that's where I headed, up to the top floor. I let myself into the darkened room, closed the door behind me. With the lights of the city way below seeping through the balcony window, I found a place in back of the settee and sat down to wait and think. The balcony window being open, the roar of the city traffic underneath came gently through and helped my thinking. That's when it hit me. Seema. Several years before I had served my term in Hollywood, there was an actress named Vivian Seema. The same face as that of Cherry Dana. Now the clouds were beginning to lift, and at the same time, the door opened in the suite and the silhouetted figure of a man entered the room.
Blast the luck.
Okay, Buff. Relax.
What?
This is Candy. Come on over here by the settee. Hurry. I'm expecting company.
What are you doing here, Candy?
You've got the wrong page of the script. That's my line. What are you doing here, Buff?
Honestly, you've got to believe me. I left my lighter here this afternoon. I was afraid the police would find it. Naturally, I can't afford any bad publicity. It'll ruin my career.
I believe you, Buff. You always were fond of that career, weren't you? Don't answer, just keep quiet.
What's up?
A guy named Seema, if I'm right. Shh. Whistles. Reginald Dix didn't like him. Wait a minute. I think I hear someone coming along the hall.
The door slowly opened and closed again. The dim light from the hall showed the form of another man. Then the dark figure moved slowly but surely across the room. It stopped for a second or two, as though listening for something. Then moved again to the balcony, out onto the balcony, and whoever it was grabbed the ledge above, hoisted his feet up onto the iron grillwork, and hung over the city. That's when I acted. Okay, Ames, stay right where you are, in that position.
What? You think I'm a fool?
Candy's out on that ledge. He's ducked around the outside on that ledge.
I'm a fool. Quick, Buff, go down the hall and get out of the fire escape. Cut him off.
Okay, what are you going to do?
Go out on that ledge after him. You better come back, Ames. You're cut off at both ends.
Oh, no, I'm not. Not with this gun I've got.
That's the same gun you killed Dix with, isn't it? Very clever hiding it up on this ledge out here. No wonder Mallard and his boys didn't find it. Look out there on the city, Ames. One misstep and you go off into space. Think it over. You better come back.
Not on your life.
I'm coming after you.
I'm down at the other end, Candy.
Good. Now we've got him.
Yes. Yes, you have. Obviously, this is the end. Perhaps you don't know what it is to love. Perhaps you don't know what it is to be scorned. I do, painfully so. This is the end. But I'm not going to go alone. You're going with me, Miss Matson, like this.
No! No, the recoil, it'll knock you right out of the head.
Oh!
So it was just a matter of jealousy. Is that right, Candy?
That's right, Mallard, dear. The same thing you developed when you walked in on Buff Arnold and me.
Okay, so I was burned up. Tell me more.
It was the name Seema that did it, Mallard. Do you know what that is?
All right, I'll play quizzes with you. What's the name Seema?
Seema is Ames, spelled backwards.
Uh-oh.
You see, that was Ames' real name. At one time, he had married Cherry Dana under the name of Seema. When she began to be big in pictures, she divorced him, but he carried the eternal torch.
Silly, she wasn't worth it.
Of course not. Because she collected men. Reginald Dix, not because she loved him, but because she was fading in pictures and because Dix was the only one who could keep her in front of the public.
Logical. But what about the Seema hung up in the tree on Telegraph Hill?
Uh-huh. There we have the plot. The Seema up in the tree was Ames's brother, a ne'er-do-well. The night that Ames arrived in town here, he looked up his brother, got a bit tight, and told him what he'd done. Caused the original leading man to disappear, shoved the original assistant director off a platform, breaking his legs. In general, did everything he could to sabotage the picture. Then he pulled the strings to get himself named as assistant director so he could be near Cherry.
Love and jealousy.
Mallard, I'll get to that in time. Cherry had vaguely promised that she'd remarry Ames. But when he saw his own brother was going to blackmail him, he went crazy. That's when he strung him up with the dummies in the trees. From there, it was just a step to knock off Reginald Dix and have a clear track for himself.
I'll go back to what I said to begin with. Why did these characters from Hollywood have to come up here to San Francisco and louse up our scenery, as well as our police department?
Oh, to heck with your police department. That's the last time I'm going to climb around a ledge hundreds of feet in the air.
Not so strange. Buff Arnold was out on that ledge, too, wasn't he?
Oh, Mallard, sometimes you make me... That reminds me, I have a date tomorrow night.
Sure, with Buff Arnold.
No, that's tomorrow morning. I'm driving him down to the railroad station. Date for tomorrow night? With you, Mallard, dear. We're going to see a Roy Acuff movie.
Oh, Candy. Roy Acuff, monarch of all the cowboys.
Yeah, monarch of all the cowboys. I'll see him with you. Oh. And if that isn't love, I don't know what is.
Listen again next week at this same time. For excitement and adventure, just dial...
Candy Matson, Yukon 28209.
Heard tonight were Hal Burdick as Reginald Dix, John Grover as Ames, the assistant director, Mary Milford as Cherry Dana, Kurt Martell as Buff Arnold, and included in the cast was Ken Langley. Henry Left plays the part of Lieutenant Ray Mallard. The program stars Natalie Masters as Candy and is written and directed by Monty Masters. Sound effects are created by Bill Brownell, and Eloise Rowan is heard at the organ. The characters in tonight's play were entirely fictitious. Any resemblance to actual people is purely coincidental. Tonight's engineer was Clarence Stevens. The program came to you from San Francisco. Dudley Manlove speaking.
Coping 19, brought to you by CDC and the Ad Council.
Managing today's uncertainty can be overwhelming. We crave security, and it's uncomfortable when we sense a lack of control over our lives. Develop a routine for a more balanced lifestyle with healthy habits and fun. Focus on what you can control, even if it's little things, like a before bedtime ritual.
Find more self-care and coping tips at coping-19.org.
This is going to be cutting it close. That was Candy Matson, The Movie Company, with an original air date of the 29th of August, 1950. I want to thank the Ad Council for our FCC obligation. My name is Arthur, and this is the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org. I'll continue and conclude the show with the second installment of Anne of the Airlanes. I have no known episode, title, or air date on this one, which would lead me to believe it's the 1930s, based on the elongated interlude and prelude. Thanks.
Mountain, river, and plain, through wind and storm, rides Anne of the Airlanes.
While Jack Baker and Ann Burton are known to be safe for the moment, aboard the airliner, things are happening in Springfield where co-pilot Pete, hostess Kay Thompson, and Bobby Baker, brother of Jack, believe they have hit upon the solution of the mysterious disappearance of a radio room that Bobby chanced to stumble into while visiting the Tyler Sanitarium. A chance mention of magicians gives Bobby an idea, and he brings out a book which shows the tricks of some of the famous magicians of the stage. On reading a certain page, Pete suggests that they go directly to the airport and pick up Art Morrison, who is expected to arrive any minute with his passengers, Aunt Hattie, and the Florida native Zebulon Abercrombie, or just plain Zeb, who seems to have an interest in the rounding up of the smugglers. Just what has that book on magic to do with the Tyler Sanitarium? Surely Pete cannot believe in the superstitions of the Dark Ages, in the strange powers of unholy rites and weird potions? Suppose we listen as our friends arrive at the Springfield Airport.
Gee, that was a good takeoff. But I wonder if that pilot could have gotten that good if he had had to face a hurricane like Jack did on that little island. You think so, Kay?
Well, I don't know, Bobby. Herb's a pretty good pilot. But that brother of yours, well, he's not bad either.
I'll say he's not bad. He's just the best, that's all. No wonder those smugglers wanted him to fly for them. They knew they had to get there with those diamonds, and Jack was the one fellow they could depend on. They didn't know that Jack would join up with it.
Bobby, not a word here. You never know who's going to hear you around this field, and we do know that the gang has someone on duty here who's been giving them some pretty reliable information.
Oh, gosh, that's right. I nearly forgot. Say, it looks like Pete's forgot to come back. He's been over at that radio room long enough
Oh, he'll be along in a minute. He's got an awful lot to talk about, you know. And a lot to find out, incidentally, about what's been going on since we left here. Oh, but I do wish he'd tell us about Morrison and that air cat.
Yeah, and he's got that book on magic with him, too. I just hope he doesn't lay it down somewhere and forget it.
Oh, don't you worry about that, Bobby. He's hanging on to that book so we can show Art Morrison how we were fooled that first time we looked for the radio room in the Tyler Sanitarium.
Gosh, I wish Mr. Morrison and Aunt Hattie would show up pretty soon. I want to get over and see if I'm right about that. Oh, Pete's coming over here now. When are they getting in, Pete?
We ought to be hearing their motors any minute now, Bobby. There goes the light now.
And that's an aircat motor, too. There's his light, see?
Oh, he seems to be bringing it in pretty fast, doesn't he, Pete?
Well, it looks fast from here, all right, but that's just about right for an aircat.
Oh.
We came in like that, only you probably didn't notice it. Morrison can handle a ship okay. I found that out.
Pete, do you honestly think that he's a government radio man? Or...
Bobby, remember what I told you.
Oh, gee, that's right. Gosh, you just can't trust anybody anymore.
see anyone in the cabin, Kay? I mean, besides Aunt Hattie?
Yes, she's in the back seat, and there's someone up front with Mr. Morrison. I guess this Zeb made the trip all right.
Say, where did Tony Johnson go to, Pete? I thought he said he was going to wait right here until his air cat got in.
It's a funny thing about Tony. He's hardly had a wink of sleep since those fellas stole that ship the other night. So when we got the radio call just a minute ago that Morrison was just about to land, Tony gave a sigh of relief, sat down on the bench in the radio room, and went quietly but very soundly to sleep.
Oh, good old Tony. I guess the relief was just too much after all the suspense. Well, Aunt Hattie, you don't look much the worse for your experience, nor you, Mr. Morrison.
Well, I can't say that I want to go through with it again very soon. Oh, have you heard anything about...
Anne? No, not a thing, Aunt Hattie. That is, any more than you probably already know. She's safe on the transport.
Oh, if you can call that safe.
Art, all I can say is that for a person whose business is radio, you do a mighty nice job of handling an air cat. And they're plenty tricky if you don't know them, too.
Thanks, Pete. Well, let's see here. I want to introduce you to a friend of ours we picked up in Florida.
They picked us up, you mean? At the point of a rifle.
I guess that is a little more accurate. Anyhow, Zeb here has sort of joined us in, well, in our little business enterprise. Mr. Abercrombie, I want you to meet Miss Kate Thompson, hostess for Interstate Airlines.
Mr. Abercrombie?
I'm Zeb to my friends, Miss.
Kay to my friends, Zeb.
Miss Kay. So you're a hostess. I guess maybe I'll have to do more of my traveling by airplane after this. Only I've been doing more of it in the last couple of days than I ever counted on.
And this is Pete Peterson. He's Jack Baker's co-pilot when Jack is on his regular run for Interstate. I think you'll be with us in this. Is that right, Pete?
Yeah, Art. Got the word this evening about that. Sure glad to meet you, Mr. Aber...
Just plain Zeb, Pete. I always like to use first names. It don't sound so formal as using Mr. all the time, and sometimes when you're hollering for help, well, saying Mr. So-and-so every time you yell would sort of hamper you, so to speak.
Right you are, Zeb. You're a man after my own heart.
And this is Bobby, Jack Baker's brother.
Glad to meet you, Mr. Abercrombie.
Same thing goes for you, too, Bobby. I know all about how youngsters should be respectful, but... You can be respectful and still call me Zeb, can't you, Bobby?
I'll say I can, Mr. Zeb. Say, didn't you feel kind of funny when you bailed out of that ship the very first time?
Bailed out? I'm sort of feared
I means don't... when you parachuted down back there in the Everglades, Zeb.
Oh, well, why didn't you say so, Bobby? Yeah, I guess I did at that. When I felt that airplane go off and leave me hanging there in nothing but space, I kind of had my heart in my mouth. I bet I counted 10 faster than I ever did before. Then I just pulled that latch string and prayed. And the next thing I knowed, I was just sort of floating down, ashamed of myself for being scared in the first place. Did you ever,
bail out.
Thanks. Bail out, Pete?
Afraid I have, Zeb. Two-time member of the Caterpillar Club.
There's too many funny names in this here game to suit me. Caterpillar Club.
I might explain, Zeb. The Caterpillar Club is sort of an honorary group of flyers who have been forced to take to their parachutes to save themselves from a crash. Almost all of the veterans are members.
But you don't hear much of it anymore because the planes are just about as foolproof and weatherproof as science can make them. And with radio, you know just where you're going. But look, Art, I think Bobby has stumbled on something interesting, and it's right in your line. So if we can get off this field and get somewhere where we can talk without a chance of being overheard, I'll give you the lowdown.
Oh, well, just a minute, Pete. Aunt Hattie went into the administration building to get her bags.
Oh, here she comes with them now. I'll help her with them. I'll help you carry your bags, Aunt Hattie.
And I thought I was having excitement when I was down with the natives in Africa. But that couldn't hold a candle to hanging around one of these airplane fields. Something going on all the time. Just look at the size of that one that just landed. Big as a house. Lots bigger than some I've lived in.
Well, that's the regular flight that came from Detroit, Zeb. Oh, everything all right, Aunt Hattie?
They were there just like I left them, Kay. I was wondering if that pilot would take them back to Detroit when he couldn't find me.
Oh, you got your car here, Pete?
Yeah, it's on the other side of the building. I think we can all crowd in.
Well, that's the only way to travel for me.
Certainly was a remarkable...
Well, we wait until those passengers from the Detroit ship have gone through the gate, and then
Pete,
we...
Pete, look, that fellow right there, the one with the black hat.
Which one? What do you mean, Bobby?
You see, the fellow that's walking with a kind of a limp?
Yes, I see the one you mean. What about him, Bobby?
Well, that's the fellow I told you about that I saw in the radio room in the Tyler Sanitarium.
What?
The one that was working on some kind of a machine and that talked with a foreign accent, remember?
Yeah. Hey, listen, Bobby, you sort of fall in line with him and see if you can find out where he goes from here. Think you can do that?
Oh, sure I can, Pete.
And meet us at my car as soon as he leaves.
Okay, Pete, I'll do it if I can.
That fella looks sort of familiar to me. I was just trying to figure out where I'd seen him before.
It's a fella that Bobby saw in the radio room of the Tyler place when he happened to stumble onto it once.
And it disappeared like magic when we went to look for it a couple of hours later.
Now, wait a minute, young fella. You mean to tell me that a regular radio station in a room just went poof like that?
I know it sounds like something out of a book, Zeb, but that's just about it. We went to the exact place we'd been before, and, Well, it just wasn't there, that's all. It was just kind of a laundry room like you'd find in the basement of any hospital.
They told me the same story, Mr. Zeb. And, well, it sounds just a little far-fetched. Although, to tell the truth, it's not one bit more preposterous than anything that's happened in the last week.
Oh, well, I ain't saying that it didn't happen, ma'am. Because I've seen them African voodoo doctors work.
Oh, here's the car. Put Aunt Hattie's bags in the trunk, Pete.
There you are. If I can just find this key. Darn, here it is.
You're getting back, Aunt Hattie. You and I'll drop out at my house. You must be worn out completely.
Oh, I certainly am, Kay. But if I thought I'd hear anything from Anne, I'd be willing
She's to... all right. You can bet on that. As long as Jack is around, she'll be okay. But look, Art, here's what I was going to tell you about that room. While we was talking about it a while ago, Bobby got an idea and dug up a book on magic. You know, one of these exposés of some of the tricks by famous magicians. But there's one in there that, well, it seems to fit the case.
Magicians? Now, see here, if you folks are going to start bringing in them things, I'd just as soon go back to Africa and the voodoo doctor.
Pete, you're not serious about this magic thing, are you?
Mr. Morrison, I fear that the strain of the last week has been telling on Mr. Pete. Either that or he's grasping at any explanation he can find to explain the cleverness of this gang.
Go on, laugh if you want to. But you just wait until we get to Kay's house. I'll show you in this book here. And I think you'll agree with us that all the magic isn't on the stage. Oh, here comes Bobby. Everything okay, Bobby?
Yes, okay, Pete.
We better get away from this airport before we say anything.
Good idea, Art. You're getting back, and Bobby, you and Zeb climb in with me, okay?
Yeah.
Yeah,
let's
see.
Well, was it the same fellow, Bobby?
Yeah, sure was. And he was met right outside the depot by a big car. I tried to get the license number, but it was too dark, and they didn't have any taillights showing on the plate.
Was it Doc Tyler's car?
I don't think so, Pete. At least not the one he usually uses. Well, anyway, this foreign fellow said something to the driver. I couldn't see who he was either. And then, as he got in, he said, "We must hurry, for we have many messages to send tonight, and I must talk to the doc first."
Did you see which way they went?
Yeah. They headed right out on the street to take you up to the Tyler Hospital.
Fine. We'll stop at Kay's house so you and Zeb can take a look at this book, Art. And then we'll head out that way ourselves and see if Bobby's as good a detective as I think he is.
Well, I know he is. And I know he's right about that magic trick business. Because I just remembered where I seen that foreigner that walks with a limp.
Zeb remembers the man with the limp. Just how does he connect this man with the mysterious radio room and the book of magic? Will our friends be successful in solving the enigma? And will the messages that seem so important to the stranger have a bearing on the fate of Anne Burton as she crouches in the cramped quarters of the baggage compartment of the transport that is carrying Jack Baker and the two gangsters toward their first goal, Cape St. Roque? More thrills and adventures unfold when you tune in the next episode of Anne of the Airlines.
We heard the second installment of Anne of the Airlines. Again, I don't know too much about this program. It was not in the Encyclopedia of Old Time Radio, so I have no episode numbers, titles. All I know, it's something from the 30s from Old Time Radio catalog, said it's from the 1930s. All I can deduce is that it is. With the elongated interlude and prelude that I had to heavily edit for this one to get it in. We bookended Candy Matson with Anne of the Airlines. Thanks for listening. This is Arthur here at 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org. Tufts Freeform Radio in Medford. Thanks for listening.
A slow dance in the fast lane, the romance,
The pleasure and the pain, you put your guard up, but then it fell, because it feels right. Man, it's heaven, but it's hell. You make a promise, and you keep it. You wanna shout it, but it's a secret. Hey, you got it wrong, man, but it's right now. You can't help it, you're gonna shout it out loud.